Good morning, church. My name is Kathy, and I'm a partner here at Sycamore Creek. I'm also a volunteer on the teaching team, and I'm delighted to be here this morning with all of you. And I'm really glad that you made the decision this morning to get up and come to church. You picked a great day to be here because we're concluding this series on divine direction. And we've been looking at God's divine direction in our life. You see the icons on the windows here, the little maps. We talk about God in our workplace, in the school, at home, in our church, in all those places that we go. Today we're looking at the final direction, which is having the faith to start. Now you would think that would have been the first one, wouldn't you? Having the faith to start seems like the good place to start. But here's the rub. It's the start that stops people. And you never finish what you don't start. It's a start that stops us. And you don't finish what you don't start. Everything we have learned in this series up to this point has prepared us for the starting. We've talked about asking for direction, deciding a direction, trusting the process of our decision making. We've looked at all those things, and we know that God cares more about who we are than what we do. Remember talking about the who and the do? And he cares less about what we do than why we do it. He looks at our character. God's divine direction helps us to listen to and follow the prompting of the Holy Spirit. But we have to have the faith to start. Now, it's not just about the big decisions, the big things in life, although we certainly want God to be a part of the big decisions. But it's also about the countless daily choices we make, the decisions we make. In fact, we most please and glorify God when we include him in those incidental things that we do every day. At any given moment, you may be one decision away from changing your life forever. The choices you make will lead you one way or the other. We're talking about your life story. You know, if you blank pages of your life story, there's things yet to be filled in. It isn't finished yet. If you're here this morning, God is not through with you yet. When you know who to trust, you'll always know how to get to that divine direction in your life. In order to step toward God's destiny, though, we have to sometimes step away from security, step away and toward something new. We have to step away from something that maybe we're comfortable with. That's difficult sometimes, whether it's you want to start school or a new job or maybe rehab. There's things in your life you need to walk away from and toward. Maybe it's a small group, joining a small group. If you've never done that before, that can be a big step. Start a new business, start a weight loss program or a smoking cessation program. All those things require us to step away and toward, and it takes faith because we get comfortable with what's uncomfortable. We get complacent with what makes us miserable. We get used to unhealthy situations, and sometimes we stick with them because we fear more the unknown. We fear that start. God's divine direction can move us away and toward hope and a new life, but we need to have the faith to start. The Bible defines faith for us in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1 says, "Faith is believing what we hope for and being certain of what we cannot see." Having faith is believing what you hope for. And sometimes we don't know how to start. We don't know how to start something new. It's hard to take that first step. That's all we need to do. We get stymied before we even start. Anybody like me, sometimes it's hard to just get started. It's a start that stops us. I'm convinced that many times we have no clear end in sight when we start something new. We might have an idea of something we'd like to accomplish, what we hope for an end result, but we really have no way of knowing how we're going to impact the lives of other people with the choices we make and where we're going to end up. But sometimes we do. Sometimes we know exactly. We have a plan. We know exactly what we're headed for. There's an Old Testament Bible story that illustrates this. It's about a man named Nehemiah. Nehemiah is a good example of someone who took a first step away and towards something new. And he finished what he started in faith. Nehemiah was a high official in the Persian court of King Artaxerxes. He was a king's cupbearer. Now, do you know what the cupbearer to the king did? I see some heads nodding. Yeah, the cupbearer kind of sounds what it what it is. He was the cupbearer. He was the one responsible to prepare, personally prepare and bring the king his cup. He served as the king's cupbearer. Now, the king had a lot of enemies, a lot of people out to get him. A lot of people like to see him go down. So the cupbearer had a very important job. The king had a lot of trust, rightly so, in his cupbearer. But that also gave the cupbearer some unique opportunities. He had an advantage. He could speak to the king directly, maybe ask him questions even, or ask for favors. He had a lot of influence with the king. One day when he brought the king his cup, Nehemiah was noticeably troubled. And the king asked him, what was wrong? Nehemiah shared with the king how he was heartbroken over a situation with his homeland. He was just sick with the idea of this news that he'd received about Jerusalem laying in ruin. You see, the Israelites had been taken captive by the Babylonians, and for some 70 years they were enslaved. God allowed this due to their disobedience. But now those who had survived the exile were returning to Jerusalem to just find it in ruin. A sad state of affair. The walls were rubble, and the gates were destroyed by fire. It broke Nehemiah's heart. He wept about it for days. He mourned about it. He prayed to God. He praised God for his greatness, and he confessed the sin of his own sin and the sin of his people. He fasted and prayed. And this is what Nehemiah prayed to God. He said, "Remember the word you gave to your servant Moses when you said, 'If you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the peoples. But if you return to me and keep my commandments by really doing them, even though your outcasts live under distant skies, I will gather them from there and bring them to the place that I have chosen as a dwelling for my name.'" Nehemiah had a pull on his heart. He wanted to go fix things. He had a vision to rebuild the wall in Jerusalem, the wall that surrounds and protects the city. He became consumed with the idea. I wonder if any of you ever get consumed with an idea. Something gets in your head and you just can't stop thinking about it day and night. Nehemiah became obsessed with this idea. He wanted to tackle rebuilding that wall, but you know, he wasn't the most equipped person to do it, probably. He was a cupbearer. He was no general contractor, but he did have good connections. That helps. But more than anything else, Nehemiah was blessed with a divine burden on his heart. He was blessed with a divine burden. In order to get things started and to get things done, we need to have a divine burden. If there's something bothering you right now, something that's just not right, and you want to scream, "This is wrong," you may have a divine burden. Maybe there's an issue or a group of people in need that's just wrecking your heart, and you're obsessively thinking about that. It's just occupying your thoughts day and night. You may have a divine burden. If you're divinely unsettled, disturbed, and just miserable in a good sort of way, if you are just thinking about something and passionate about something, you may be falling in love with somebody, or you may have a divine burden. It's funny how those two situations provoke the same feelings in us. You're passionate about it. God will bless us with a burden, and just to provoke passion in us that leads us to divine direction in our lives, to make the world a better place. That's what happened to Nehemiah. Now, the writer Josh DeFern wrote in his column about being blessed with a burden. He said that identifying your divine burden is as easy as answering these three questions. What breaks your heart? What makes you angry? And what do you care about that others don't? If you can answer those three questions, it will lead you to your divine burden, which will lead you to divine direction in your life. I think of people like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He couldn't stand the racial oppression that he witnessed in our country back in the 1960s. 50s and 60s. He became famous for his burden. It broke his heart to see the lynching of black people. It made him angry to see black men and women forced to sit in the back of the bus or forcibly removed from diners, made to use segregated public facilities. That burden drove him crazy. He was angry about it. He cared more about it than others seemed to be. At least they ignore, a lot of people ignored it or treated it like it was a normal behavior. The burden drove him to do something. And because of his courage and commitment, race relations were changed forever in the United States. Now, it's still not perfect. We know that. We see things every day that are still not right, that make us angry. But can you imagine where we would be today without the divine burden that Martin Luther King had on his heart? I think about Mother Teresa. She had a divine burden. She cared for the lost and least. She devoted her life to doing that in Calcutta, India. I think about Jesus. He certainly had a divine burden. Kind of makes you think about your own divine burden, doesn't it? Did me. I thought about it. I thought, I tried to think about a divine burden that I'd been blessed with in my life. Something that stirred me to do something important. I racked my brain over it, actually. I have to tell you, I really struggled. I struggled to think of anything substantial that I've done in my almost 60 years now of life to make this world a better place. You know, we're supposed to leave the world better than when we found it. But I couldn't think of anything. I couldn't think of anything significant. Now, I've done good things in my life. I've done a lot of good things, but I could not come up with anything that was earth-shatteringly newsworthy. Now, granted, I was using Martin Luther King Jr. and Mother Teresa and Jesus as my benchmark. So maybe I set the bar a little high for myself. Maybe I was shooting a little too high. Like the guy who died and went to heaven. You probably heard about him. He was standing in line at the pearly gates waiting to see St. Peter, and he realized standing right in front of him was Mother Teresa, the Mother Teresa, right in front of him. He couldn't believe it. He was so excited as he approached the pearly gates. He couldn't wait to see what St. Peter would have to say to her. But he was dismayed as they got up there, and he overheard St. Peter say to Mother Teresa, "If only you could have done more." I'm glad you guys caught that. First service didn't get She did a lot of good things, obviously. But maybe I've set the bar too high for myself. It doesn't take much. It doesn't take much. I set the bar a little bit too high for me because, let's face it, most of us are not going to go down in the history books. We're not. We're just not going to. I'm sorry to break that to you this morning, but the majority of people who go through this life are going to be largely forgotten once they're gone. That's just the way it is. Except by their own families or loved ones. They'll, you know, maybe a few co-workers or a neighbor, you know, they might remember you for a while. But after a few generations, even them, your name is not likely to be remembered. I know a lot about my parents. I know a lot about my grandparents. I know a little bit about my great-grandparents. But I really know little to nothing about my great-great-grandparents. My dad's dad's grandpa. I don't know if I could even tell you his name right now without looking it up somewhere. But, you know, it dawned on me that maybe it's not just about doing big things in this life. Perhaps more important are the small things that we consistently do to ease the burden of other people. That's our imprint. That's how we make a difference while we're here. It's taking a moment to say hello to the elderly gentleman who's sitting in a wheelchair by himself in the waiting room at the doctor's office. It's the encouraging smile you give to a crying child at the grocery store. You know, the grocery store offers us a plethora of opportunities to test our character. Did you know that? It's taking opening the door for the person behind you, holding it. It's leaving that space closest to the door for someone else. You don't have to tap the closest spot. It's not parking on the blue lines of the handicapped space so that the person with the van can't get out when they park in there. It's picking up the trash in the parking lot that you didn't drop. It's returning the cart to the cart stall, even if it's not your cart. Those are the right things to do. It's putting the bread back in the bread aisle when you change your mind, instead of where you're conveniently located when you discover you change your mind. Not in the cleaning aisle, not next to the tide, taking it back to the bread aisle. It's keeping your patience when the person who's checking you out is frazzled, overworked, underpaid, unhappy, and rude, and having a bad day. We have chances to do those kinds of things every day, opportunities. Call someone, drop them a note, send them a Facebook message. I'm thinking about you. How you doing today? It takes very little effort. In fact, it takes no effort at all. We just have to be mindful to do it. We have to be mindful. Listen, our lives are not insignificant because we haven't done something newsworthy. Our lives are not insignificant because we haven't won a Nobel Peace Prize, or our names are not household names. Our lives are not insignificant. The only history book we should care to be written in is the one that's written in the golden pen, right? God cares. There's a line in a poem by the poet Emily Dickinson that says, "If I can stop one heart from breaking, I shall not live in vain." It's the little things that matter. It's not the big things. I saw a video on Facebook a few months ago that really touched my heart. And some of you might have seen it too, because it was quite popular. But it was posted by a man named Bill Hart. Bill Hart's a speaker and an author, and he's a coach to real estate professionals, of all things. But he made this video, and he talks in the video about a serendipitous encounter he had with a woman, a stranger, at a restaurant that touched him. He called it a shoulder tap. Watch this.
Shoulder taps. So Tony and I are having lunch at California Pizza Kitchen the other day, and across from us I noticed this elderly woman sit down. She's dressed nicely, and she's at a large table by herself for about 5 minutes, and then what appears to be her daughter shows up, and I don't recall, two or three grandkids, and they all look spectacular, ready for a nice meal, obviously. And about that time, a voice in my head starts saying, "You need to go tell her how pretty she looks." So I don't even know if we're eating at this point or not, but the food arrives, check arrives. We're gonna go down the walkway a little bit in this strip center and look for something. And that's the next thing that we're gonna move to. So Tony stands up. I don't tell her any of this. And on my way out, I just kneel down and kind of get into this position where I'm at her level, right where she's now in her chair. And I said, "Hey, if nobody else has told you yet today, I just want you to hear from me how lovely you are." And she looks at me with a look I've never seen before and says, "I know you." And I said, "No, we don't know each other." And she said, "I know your spirit." And it gets really quiet between us. And she says, "My husband died a year ago, and that's something he would have said to me." And at that moment, I can't talk. I'm overcome by emotion. And I just hug her and smile at her through tears, and I leave. But here's what I know, and here's the reason I'm telling you this. I believe that God taps us on the shoulders and uses us at just the right moment. And what I know for sure is that she was blessed, and I was enormously blessed. So I've learned in my life to listen to these shoulder taps, because they do happen. And I believe the more that we listen to them, the more in alignment we are with God. And that's an awesome place to be. Shoulder taps.
Shoulder taps. I've learned to listen to those shoulder taps in my life too. And I can't tell you the times when a name pops into my head and I think, I need to call that person, like right now, call that person. And I do. And the times when I've ignored that shoulder tap, it never turns out right. I always hear something happen and why didn't I call them when I should have. So I encourage you to listen to those shoulder taps too. We need to be open and aware and just mindful of the people that God puts in our path. There's a reason for that. I was told you I was struggling with my divine burden, trying to think about it, and I realized as I was listening to that video and preparing this that my divine burden in life has been to care for people that are grieving, care for people who are going through that season in their life. I've spent a lot of time next to people in their last hours at a hospital and helping families through the process of doing funerals and preparing programs for the funeral, singing at funerals. I've done, usually it's for people that I know or somehow connected to, a family member, a friend, or a coworker, parents of a friend, church, family. So it's usually somebody I know, and I've done enough of them now that people will say to me, Kathy, when I go, I want you to sing at my funeral, or I want you to speak at my funeral. I always say, okay, I will, but if I go first, got a deal? They never want to make that deal, but you know, singing at a funeral, helping people with that process, those are things I can do, so I feel I must do it. I feel it's a pull, it's a divine burden God has given me. It's a tap on my shoulder that I have to do that. I'm sure there's things that you are thinking about this morning too, that you feel pulled to do. Now, it doesn't make a big difference by the world's standards, by the big scheme of things. I mean, no one's going out and writing a big story about it in the newspaper, although Bill did get 25 million views on his video. Just saying. But most of us are not going to do that. But you know what? It does make a world of difference for that one who's hurting and needs support. When Artaxerxes saw Nehemiah's downcast face and he heard his tale of woe, the king simply said, "What is it that you want? What is it that you want?" King Artaxerxes gave Nehemiah permission to travel to Judah. He gave him a little leave of absence from his cupbearing, let him go, and he also gave him letters so he could give them to the governors of the land and the keeper of the timber, the forest, so he could get timber for the wall and the gates and even the house he was going to live in. He got all that. Nehemiah got everything he asked for from the king. I think the king's role gets a little lost in the story because he was a blessing. He could have easily said, "I'm really sorry for your loss. I'll pray for you. Now go get me some wine." But he didn't. Nehemiah's divine burden was converted into a divine direction. And God can do that in our lives too. What is it you're being pulled to do? Is there something that you've been pondering? Is there something that you're angry about? Something breaking your heart? What do you care about that nobody else seems to be doing anything about? Is there a wall in your life that needs to be rebuilt or maybe torn down? There's two simple steps required for you to start. Start small and take the next step. Start small and take the next step. God rejoices when we begin to take the divine direction in our lives, that first step toward and away from something else. If you're a parent, you may remember when your child made that first feeble attempt, that first step, and you were excited, and you encouraged them. You said, "Yes, good job, you can do it. It's okay if you fall. Get up, try again." You didn't discourage them. You didn't say, "Why'd you fall? Get up." You're not supposed to fall. Well, you are supposed to fall. Just imagine how much more God rejoices over our feeble beginnings, our first wobbly steps. He's smiling and encouraging us. Yes, good job. In Zechariah 4:10, it says, "Do not despise these small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin." If there's something you're being called to do, you only have to have the faith to start. You don't have to have the faith to finish, only the faith to start. You may not even see the end where you're heading. Martin Luther King famously said, "Take the first step in faith. You don't have to see the whole staircase. Just take the first step. And then take the next step." It's good to think big. It's good to think down the road. But all that's required for us to get started is to start small and then take the next step and the next. It's one step at a time. Don't let the start stop you. This is true of the calling in our lives to be Christ ambassadors to the world and helping the ease the burden of other people, but it's also true in our own personal lives. Do you want to improve your health? Is your divine burden to make your health a priority? Maybe you want to lose a little weight or improve your cholesterol. Whatever it is, you can do it. What's one choice you can make? One step, one meal, one decision at a time. Maybe you desire financial freedom. Start making the right choices. What can you do to head in that direction? One purchase at a time. Maybe you need to improve relationships in your life. What can you do? What step could you take? It's not too late. It's not too late to change a story that you will tell one day. You have blank pages. Your life's not, your story isn't over. Today's a blank page waiting to be filled. There was a popular quote back in the 1960s. Probably some of you had it on a poster in your bedroom, on your bedroom wall, that said, "Today is the first day of the rest of your life." Remember that poster? Still a good saying. Start small, take the first step in faith, and then the next and the next. There's a famous story I want to share with you before I close about a donkey in a well. Now, I know some of you are familiar with the donkey in the well story. It's been around a long time. But some of you haven't heard it. So I want to share it because it goes well with what we're talking about, taking the next step. One day, a farmer's donkey fell in a well. And he cried piteously for hours and hours. And the farmer tried to figure out what to do. He could not figure out what to do with this donkey. Finally, he decided, you know what? The animal is old. The well needs to be covered up anyway. So he invited his neighbors to come over, and they all grabbed a shovel, and they began to shovel dirt into the well. At first, the donkey realized what was happening, and he cried all the more. But pretty soon, he quieted down. And a few shovels later, the farmer peeked down in the well, and he was astonished at what he saw. With every shovel full of dirt that hit that donkey's back, he was doing something amazing. He would shake it off and take a step. Every shovel full that went in, the donkey would shake it off, take a step. And pretty soon they were amazed when the donkey simply stepped up over the top of the well and trotted off. Of course, the moral of the story is that life is going to shovel dirt in on top of us from time to time. You're going to find yourself in some pits. The walls may crumble about you, but the trick to getting out of the well, to overcoming the holes that we've dug ourselves in, is to shake it off and take the next step. Our troubles can be stepping stones. Opportunities can be stepping stones when a divine burden is placed on your heart. But you have to have the faith to start. Take the first step, and then the next, and the next, and the next. Let us pray. Oh God, we thank you for the story of Nehemiah, his desire and obsession to rebuild that wall. That was his divine burden, and it led to divine direction step by step. We know it wasn't easy for him, but we know that the wall wasn't the thing that motivated Nehemiah. It was what was on the other side of that wall. Rebuilding the wall rebuilt the temple, the economy, the culture, and the Israelites' passion for and obedience to you. That's the true divine burden. We can't begin to comprehend all that God will accomplish. We just thank you, Lord, that we have the faith to start small and then take the next step. We ask for courage to do that. In your name we pray. Amen.